As you were there. Herbert laughed. Though that girl handles herself better than you think. Why you hassling me, man? Quit blocking the hallway. I gotta go to the John.
Chi moved aside to let Herbert pass and walked toward CS's studio. Herbert's voice bellowed after him.
Do not open that unless you need CS to kick your behind all the way back to Shiprock.
Before Chi could answer, a long buzzing sound interrupted his thoughts, followed by a loud knock from outside the building door. 12. Captain Largo rolled his chair back slightly from the desk. Bernie smelled a hint of his old spice.
Manuelito, how cozy are you with Rose Cooper?
I barely know her. I've spoken to her a couple times on the phone and talked to her in person when I went out to meet with the Wings and Roots group. That's it.
And Domingo Cruz?
I never met him. Largo sipped his coffee, then put the cup down.
That's what I thought. Well, Counselor Walker will be here in an hour. The chief's office called me about her again. She's still insisting you're part of some conspiracy with Cooper and Cruz to divert tribal funds, or maybe to cover up their misdeeds. She wants your head, and the chief wants you to talk her down so he doesn't have to deal with this.
I don't understand why she thinks I'm part of some conspiracy. I mean, Largo dismissed the argument with a wave of his hand.
Talk to her, make her go away.
Bernie got some coffee and then sifted through her messages, but she couldn't focus. Checking her email, she found the promised note from Leaphorn about Counselor Walker.
I met Walker years ago when she accused the Public Safety Department of collusion with the contractor the council hired to build the police headquarters. See attachments. She turned out to be a valuable ally once I realized how to stay on her good side. She has the most passion for issues that affect youth and about fiscal responsibility.
Great, Bernie thought. With Wings and Roots, she has both of those, and she thinks I'm a bad guy. She sent back a quick note thanking the lieutenant. Any clues for how to get her to step back? Sandra's voice came over the intercom. Annie Rainsong on the phone for you. Put her through. A moment later, the phone rang.
Hello, Officer Bernie?
Hey, Annie. What can I do for you?
Well, Mom is still really, really mad at me, and she's going to make me come with her to see you. Could you do me a favor and not tell her about the cave and the old bones?
Why don't you want me to mention the cave? I saw it, too.
Because Mom already thinks I'm a total loser, and when she finds out I broke the rules and hiked out into the lava at night by myself, she will lose it. Again. She knows enough of my screw-ups already. She doesn't need more reasons to hate me.
I'll consider your request on one condition. Annie, tell me if what you said about your last encounter with Mr. Cruz was the truth. The searchers are focusing their efforts beginning from the place you mentioned.
Annie's voice took on a ring of defiance. What I said was what I remembered.
Bernie softened her tone. When we talked about Mr. Cruz, you'd only come back from your solo. You were tired and scared. You could have said something you didn't really mean, or you might have thought of something else.
That's what happened. I was confused.
About Mr. Cruz?
No, not about him or about the cave. That's all true. But about something else, the phone you found in the parking lot.
Bernie hid her surprise. Go on, just the truth.
We were supposed to put them in the box so they would be locked in the van, but I hid it in my sleeping bag and I lost it. It fell out or something. I told Mom I left it home like she told me and didn't take it on the trip, and then my brother broke it by accident.
Annie's words flowed out in a torrent.
But I'm sure I didn't lose it in the parking lot because I had it in my tent for the solo. That's not a lie either.
Counselor Walker arrived promptly. Annie stood next to her, shifting from one foot to the other, showing none of the assertiveness she'd had on the phone. Bernie took them into the station's old conference room. She sat on one side of the table, and mother and daughter sat where officers usually placed the suspects. The counselor waved off the pleasantries and asked the first question.
Tell me why you're giving Cooper money.
What are you talking about?
Annie saw it as the girls were getting on the bus and told me. Was that to keep her quiet about your involvement in the cover-up?
Bernie shook her head. I loaned her some money for gas for the van.
Oh, really?
Mr. Cruz had the business credit card in his wallet, and the rental company wanted the van full when it was returned. She agreed to pay me back. What else are you concerned about?
Corrupt cops, especially when they have access to children.
I gave her $20. Bernie pushed a stray strand of hair behind her ear. If I wanted to bribe someone, I don't think $20 would get me very far. She hadn't meant to be funny, but Walker laughed.
You're right about that. It was too little money, even for a group as cash-strapped as that one. And too obvious an exchange. I guess you just lack the experience to understand how these crooks work.
Bernie bit back her response. Breathe in calm, she told herself. Breathe out trouble. If you have charges to make against me, I'm happy to respond. That's why I'm here.
I came down here to look you in the eye. If you're really not on the take, you can prove it by finding out what's going on with Wings and Roots and the money the tribe gave them. Come up with something definite, and I won't pursue any charges against you or the department.
Walker wiggled her middle and index fingers.
You tell me whatever you find. Since you already loaned her money, she'll trust you.
Counselor, you know that request is totally inappropriate. Bernie studied the desktop, expecting an argument from Walker, but getting none. I understand that you know a friend of mine, Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn.
That's one smart man.
I will look into Wings and Roots and how the program spends its money, and I will ask the lieutenant to help. If we find everything on the up and up, I need a promise from you.
What might that be?
That you will work for a bill to give them more tribal money to keep going.
You're trying to negotiate with me? You're a pushy one, aren't you?
I know that program helps kids, and there are more kids who could use it than they have money to serve. Kids like Annie, she thought, who need to develop more confidence. You're in a powerful position to do good, to serve as a role model for these youngsters. Walker picked up her briefcase, or maybe it was a purse that looked like a briefcase, and pushed her chair back, motioning to Annie with a jut of her chin.
Don't lecture me about doing good. You find the money that guy ran off with. That new FBI woman told me she didn't think tribal police would have the interest to get involved. Or maybe she said integrity.
Walker emphasized the word with her tone of voice. Annie looked up from her pink phone like a turtle rising for air.
Officer Bernie, did they find Mr. Cruz?
I haven't heard anything new about the search.
At first I blamed Cooper, but now I think Cruz is behind all this.
Walker stood.
He's not lost. He arranged for someone to pick him up, and he's in Hawaii or somewhere with the money. That's what you'll find out as soon as you start digging behind the scenes. I hope Leaphorn will help you. I trust him. I'm going to talk to your captain next.
Bernie opened the door, and the counselor stomped out with Annie sulking along behind. Bernie took a few deep breaths, regaining her equilibrium. If Largo thought she'd overstepped her responsibilities, so be it. She warmed her coffee, chatting with Officer Big Man for a few minutes about his wife and her mother and their joint expedition to Crown Point. She had barely returned to her cubbyhole that served as an office when Sandra buzzed her.
The captain needs to see you, and Rose Cooper wants you to call her. Do you need the number?
No, I have it. Largo sat behind his big desk, a pile of papers before him, his computer open to several screens.
So, Walker told me how Cruz's disappearance is tied to a big embezzlement scheme, and how our office might be wrapped up in all this, and how, after she talked to you, she decided you can solve it, and that I need to release you from all your other assignments. I told her we needed a place to start if we were going to look into Cruz as a runaway embezzler.
He stopped. Did you really say runaway embezzler?
No. Largo grinned at her. Counselor Walker asked me, told me, actually, to give you the assignment to look into a connection between Cruz's disappearance and Wings and Roots's money problems.
So first she thinks I'm on the take, and now she wants me to be her flunky or something? Do I have that right?
Largo chuckled.
She told me, and I quote, she's the smartest one of your sorry bunch. Do you want a minute to think about it?
No, I'll do it. She wasn't used to the captain giving her a choice of assignments. He handed her a slim folder on the top of the pile.
Walker left this information for you. It shouldn't be that complicated to match it up with the reports from Cooper. Talk to Cooper about the tribal funds, how much they get, and the way the program accounts for the money. Ask if there was any problem receiving the money or spending it, if the funding has increased over the... Is it 5 years they've been operating?
I think that's right. Realizing that she should have been taking notes, Bernie extracted her notebook and a pen from her backpack. She put Walker's folder inside. The captain waited until she stopped writing.
You should be able to tell from Cooper's attitude if she's got something to hide. If this stinks like a real problem and not a councilwoman's ranting, we'll kick it up to the chief's office and the feds. If it's nothing, we'll say that and get Walker out of our hair until she comes up with another scandal. You sure you don't want a minute to think about it?
No, I'll do it. She said it with conviction. Will you really give me the leeway to just focus on this?
Sure. Take the next 24 hours.
You know, sir, I'm not an expert when it comes to numbers.
You'll do fine, Manuelito. Ask for help if you need it.
She mentioned her idea to involve Leaphorn if he were available on short notice, and Largo agreed.
We can pay him on his regular contract.
So the counselor called us a sorry bunch. Is that right, sir?
I've been known to call you guys worse than that on a bad day.
Back in her office, she finished her coffee and called Mama.
We were talking about you yesterday.
Mama's voice sounded strong and clear.
The woman I am teaching to weave says you are lucky to have a mother close by.
And she is correct about that. How is Mrs. Big Man doing with her weaving?
She's coming along. Are you using that loom?
A little. I've been busy with my job. She waited for Mama to scold her, but Mama changed the subject.
Daughter, I need groceries. We can go after your work.
I am sorry, Mama, but I can't help you today. We talked about this earlier, remember?
I have a list of what I need. We will go to that city market. I will go into because I might see something else.
I can't help you tonight, Mama. Maybe Mrs. Darkwater can loan you what you need.
I need to get coffee and paper for the bathroom and... Hold on.
She heard Mama set the phone on the counter. She waited a few moments, studying the ever-present memos Sandra had placed on her desk. Nothing earth-shaking. Mama was back.
The lady is here to pick me up, and we have to go to the senior center now.
Mama sounded surprised by the turn of events. The senior center had a loom that Mama used to teach Mrs. Big Man. The staff left her weaving up, partly to encourage others to learn to weave, and mostly because no one else needed the loom at the moment. Bernie had gone to the center once to watch Mama and Mrs. Big Man, and was surprised to see a crowd of other ladies watching too. Mama had been patient with Mrs. Big Man's mistakes, more patient than she had ever been with her own daughter.
Don't worry about being too late. The store is open until 10.
Mama hung up. Bernie looked at her cell phone. She'd asked Darlene to make sure Mama had plenty of what she needed before she went to Santa Fe. Darlene had assured her everything was under control, that Mama had plenty of food to get by while she was taking the class. But had she asked about toilet paper or coffee? Bernie collected her thoughts and picked up the office phone. She thought about calling Chi to complain about his lack of attention, but instead called Cooper and explained that she needed to talk to her about the program's use of tribal appropriations. "Seriously? I admit that we're not in the best financial shape," Cooper said, "but we haven't done anything illegal with the tribal grant or any other funding. How come you got stuck with this?" "It doesn't matter. Can I come to the office and take a look at the paperwork?" "Sure, whenever you want. I'll be happy to show you any files, bank records, whatever. But all this seems a distraction from finding Mr. Cruz." "The searchers are out there doing their job." "How come it took so long to get going?" Cooper's voice flared with anger. Manzanares was a short timer. Maybe he'd done a few errands before coming to meet her and get the search going, Bernie thought. She kept her speculation private. "I don't know, but they are working hard now. Come on over and I'll give you some tea. Poor, poor Dom." Before heading out to see Cooper, Bernie called Beverly Katz, the incident commander, for a progress report. Unfortunately, it was exactly what she'd expected.
"No clues, no news, no sign that anyone named Domingo Cruz has ever been in or near the Malpais."
Kat sounded wired and worried.
"We've exhausted most of the possibilities, and the weather's changing. It looks like a front is coming in overnight. Our next step might be a thermal imaging device, one of those cool machines that can pick up a person's heat signature. The colder it gets, the better that thing works. And then maybe the canines. I'll have to talk to the trainer about how well their feet will hold up to the sharp lava or how they can handle the snow."
"That's tough." Bernie remembered the challenges of hiking in the lava. "I really admire those volunteers."
"Did you send a guy named Michael Franklin out here?"
"Well, I guess so. He's a friend of Mr. Cruz and wanted to do something. I hope he didn't cause a problem."
"Not at all. He's a great help. Thanks for referring him."
Cooper worked near the Shiprock Hospital, a neighborhood Bernie hadn't visited very often in her role as a police officer, in a converted garage separate from the main house. She opened the door to Bernie's knock and offered her a seat in one of two padded rolling desk chairs. The office was neat except for the desk, where papers in uneven piles covered the surface. Cooper noticed Bernie's glance. "That's my filing system," she said. "Those farthest away are the bills. The smaller stacks are the donors I need to acknowledge. And the middle stuff is, well, miscellaneous." She sat down in the chair next to Bernie and turned to face her. "So, have they found Dom? Is he dead? Is that why you're really here?"
"No, no, no. Like I told you, I'm here to talk about the financial reports."
"As long as they haven't found his body, that means hope is out there on the prowl." She gave Bernie a weak smile. "That's what we tell the kids, you know, that hope, grace, whatever you want to call it, waits for us all like a lifeline. We just have to believe in ourselves enough to reach for it." Cooper got up, filled a mug with water, and put it in the microwave. "Do you want some tea?"
"No, thank you."
Unless the person offering was a Navajo grandmother, she declined tea. Her experience with Luisa's herbal blend had left her ever wary.
"I've got some instant coffee, too."
"No, thanks. As I mentioned, Counselor Walker thinks there's some malfeasance going on with the agency and its use of Navajo Nation funding. She thinks Cruz was involved in it, and that's why he disappeared."
"That's crazy."
Bernie watched Cooper take a box down from the cabinet above the microwave, open it, and take out a tea bag.
"If we get a donation, Cruz records it and deposits it, and then I or Cruz or Mayfair draft a thank you. All our audits have been clean except for some minor discrepancies."
"What were those about?" For the first time, Bernie wondered if Counselor Walker might be onto something. Cooper sat down again.
"Oh, a balancing issue between our records and some new bookkeeping software the board talked us into. Somebody got the software as a donation."
"With some groups, the main job of the board is to raise money.
You're right, and that's part of the problem here. The board is supposed to connect us with donors, make donations themselves, or come up with ideas for fundraising that they take ownership of. But instead of that, sometimes board members really want to run the programs themselves, or meddle with them, or try to get their relatives hired. The microwave beeped. Cooper removed the cup and added the teabag. When someone new comes on the board who actually cares about the kids and really wants to help, that person may try to change the culture, but often they get frustrated and resign, or stop speaking up. The aroma from the tea drifted over to Bernie. It was some sort of mint. It might possibly taste as good as it smelled, she thought, but more likely it didn't. I'd like to see your records of grants from the Navajo Nation and how the money was used. Sure, the information about tribal funds and the way we use them is in the annual report. I have last year's in the computer and paper copies of the more recent ones over there in the file. Bank deposits and expenditure statements are there, too. If you have any questions, I can answer them or find someone who can. I wish Walker had come by and asked us for an accounting instead of assuming things were out of balance here. What about this year's donations? Cooper put her mug down. Dom is working on that. If he doesn't come back, I guess I'll have to have Mayfair do it. She knows the numbers, but she's not much of a writer. I might need to look at those in the next few days. I'll do my best. You may have to help me go through his stuff. She glanced at a second desk on the other side of the room. The top was covered with shoebox-sized containers that seemed to be filled with papers. Bernie looked at the papers on Cruz's desk and then shifted her gaze to Cooper. Why do you think Walker is after Wings and Roots? Cooper sighed. It's a personal matter. I can't talk about it. You have to. If I understand her motivation, it will help resolve things. Bernie paused. Walker told my boss there's collusion between you and me involving the program's funding. I'd like to clear my name and be done with this as soon as I can, and I'm sure you would, too. The more I know, the better job I can do. This can't get back to her, agreed. Bernie nodded and watched Cooper consider what to say next. Counselor Walker's brother worked for the program a few years ago. I had to fire him. She and I have never met, but she's been after me and Wings and Roots ever since. What did he do wrong? Cooper hesitated. I'll only say it was a personal matter. I offered him a chance to resign, but he told me to fire him so he could collect unemployment. His termination didn't have anything to do with tribal money. The counselor called me and wanted the details. I told her I couldn't talk about it. She was angry, and still is. I heard that Dom is your choice to be the new director. It's up to the board, but I'd be honored if he would be the one to replace me. Cooper stood. If you don't have any more questions, I'll get those reports for you. Bernie looked more closely at the art on the wall behind Cooper's desk. It was a photograph of a curving line, a representation of a snake or a lightning bolt, or maybe both, incised in the lava. I really like this photo. Me too. It's a famous petroglyph. Vandals destroyed it a few years ago. Where did you get the picture? Dom gave it to me for my birthday. I was thrilled. It's beautiful. Is it in New Mexico? Yes, actually, somewhere out in the Malpais. He told me it was a challenge to get there, but worth every step. So Mr. Cruz took the picture. That's another thing that makes it special to me. Cooper opened the file drawer and extracted a 3-ring binder. She handed it to Bernie. You'll find board minutes and staff reports for the past 5 years in here, and copies of bank records, too. I'd like this back when you're done. No problem. I'll copy whatever I need to hold on to. Bernie pulled her notebook and a pen from the backpack and jotted down a little receipt for the reports. Cooper looked at it. You don't need to give me that. I trust you. I trust you, too, but I need to keep everything official.
Bernie drove back to the office with the binder on the front seat of her unit. One more step in this assignment, and then, she thought, she could get back to police work in the field. She radioed to tell Sandra she was on her way in.
"The captain wants to talk to you. He told me to tell you to stay off your cell."
Her phone buzzed a minute later.
"Manuelito, we have received the report of a culturally sensitive discovery at the search site. The incident commander, Mrs. Katz, called the Cultural Preservation Office, and the director is on vacation. When she talked to the staff, they said they can't get out there today. She mentioned that you'd alerted them to a cave with bones, and they referred her to the chief, who passed the ball to us. Since you're already familiar with the players, I want you to get over there."
She waited for the important information.
"The searchers think they saw human bones, and from their descriptions, what might be a jish."
A jish, Bernie knew, was the sacred bundle a hatothi, a healer, used to help his patient get well.
"Manuelito, you just need to make sure this is legitimate, and then it can be off-limits until the cultural preservation folks get out there."
"Sir, is this the cave I mentioned to the searchers earlier?"
"I don't think so, but it sounds as though it has been looted, just like the one you saw."
"You know I'm not an expert in this."
"Anything else, Manuelito?"
"What about Cruz?"
"No word yet. Did you pick up anything from your interview with Cooper?"
Bernie had been thinking about it ever since she'd left Cooper's office.
"Sir, she was almost too cooperative. It was as if she anticipated my questions. She seemed to have been expecting me to ask about the money. Nothing she said made me think there was any funny business going on. She seemed eager to give me the reports and have us check for problems."
"That Wings and Roots stuff is crucial to get Walker off our backs. Make it your priority as soon as you're done in the Malpais."
Largo didn't need to say more.
"I will. I'm on my way. Anything else I should know about the old bones?"
"Probably. But you already know as much as I do."
With that, she climbed back into her unit and headed to the Malpais, wishing Chi, the man who had trained to be a Hatothi and knew more about the world of the sacred, was with her. 13. Chi heard the knock at the studio building door again, only more insistent.
"Who's there?"
"Who the hell do you think? I'm freezing my girls off out here. Quit messing with me, Clyde."
Chi didn't recognize the voice, but he knew what trouble sounded like. He thought about it for a split second and opened the door. A hefty woman rushed in, stomping her feet against the cold, then raising her gaze. She took a step back from Chi and grinned at him, revealing a missing bottom front tooth.
"Sup, man? What you doing here? Who called the cops on me?"
"I had a flat tire, and I came to talk to CS about it. Why are you here?"
"It's not your business, but I came to check on my man, Clyde Herbert. You seen him?"
Chi stayed silent.
"A big cop like you needs help changing a tire."
When the woman chortled, she smelled of beer.
"You think my man or CS did it on purpose, right? You cops are paranoid, dude. At least nobody stole your ride."
Chi felt his temper rising.
"I'm Jim Chi. What's your name, ma'am?"
"Juanita's good enough."
Chi heard steps behind him and turned to see Clyde Herbert, who was frowning at Juanita.
"What are you doing here?"
"I tracked you down like a coyote on a rabbit."
Her laugh was a cackle.
"You've been avoiding me. Are you seeing somebody else?"
"Like I told you, I'm working. CS and I are making a movie."
"Oh, right. You an expert on that."
She laughed again.
"I'm clean now, and I'm staying that way. You can't be here. I got work to do."
"I just watch. Then we can play."
Herbert rubbed his thumb and middle finger together nervously.
"CS doesn't like an audience."
"Well, who put that stick up his rear end? He doesn't own this building."
Juanita grabbed the big man's arm.
He's down here, right?
She shoved Herbert down the hall.
He can deal with me.
The leather heels of their boots echoed off the hard floor. She followed.
He can deal with me now, too.
Herbert stopped and stared at Chi.
I don't know what's eating you, man, but this is not the night to mess with CS. What's so special about tonight? It's the last night he has the studio, and he's got 3 nights of work to do.
The three stopped outside the studio door. The light was off. Herbert rapped his knuckles against the doorframe. His hands looked like they'd done some work, Chi thought. C.S. opened the door and took a step back in surprise.
Jim Chi, I didn't expect to see you here.
Hard to travel with a bad tire. I thought you might know something about that.
A flat, huh?
C.S. shifted his weight from one foot to the other as the three stood in silence.
Juanita, wow.
Chi nodded.
She was outside doing something, like letting the air out of my tire.
Juanita's eyes lit with anger, and she took a step toward Chi.
You son of a...
Herbert touched her arm.
Stop it. You'll get yourself in trouble.
C.S. turned to Herbert.
Wait out in the lobby a minute. Sergeant Chi and I have something private to discuss.
He pointed to Juanita with his lips.
You need to be out of here by the time I come back.
He motioned Chi into the studio and closed the door. Chi took in the scene. A green notebook, an open laptop computer, headphones, and a six-pack of beer bottles. He saw a baggie of white powder, a college catalog, a stack of unopened bills, a pistol, and the distinctive bottles of miniature liquor, some full and some empty.
What's all this?
Props. I'm expanding the video to talk a little about the disruptions to families when they are forced off their ancestral land. Have a seat.
C.S. picked up the gun on the table. Chi instinctively reached for his weapon, but C.S. set the gun down on top of the pile of bills and shoved the catalogs toward the middle of the desk. He perched on the edge of the desk, waving Chi to the chair. Chi didn't move.
I know you're leaving tomorrow, C.S. said. I wanted to clear up whatever's going on with you and me.
Good idea.
Chi worked to keep the anger out of his voice.
Your death certificate. Tell me the story. That's a reasonable place to start. And then you can move on to why you gave me a flat tire.
That death certificate.
C.S. rested his back against the wall.
My mother had a baby before I was born. A little boy. He passed away when he was about a week old. She gave me the same name.
Chi felt his eyes widen with shock. In the world in which he had grown up, the names of the dead were buried with them. In the Bilagana society, children might be named for dead relatives, but traditional Navajo families didn't operate that way. He waited for C.S. to explain.
Mom worked in the oil company office out in Farmington, and the white people pitched in to give her a big savings bond the first time she was pregnant, and they put the name of her baby on it, you know, the little one who died. She decided that I should be given that name, so when I got old enough I could have the money for school. Her relatives were horrified, and my father's family advised against it, but she didn't listen. I mean, giving a baby the name of a dead child has to be bad. I use C.S. or a nickname or sometimes my private name, you know.
Chi nodded. He had his secret Navajo name that no one used except Blue Woman, the beloved wife of the deceased uncle who had begun to teach him the prayers, songs, and sand paintings of a Hatasi, and now Bernie. C.S. leaned forward.
That name, it freaks me out. No one ever called me that until I went to school, and then the teachers needed a birth certificate. They used it until I got them to stop. C.S. fits me, and it doesn't have to do with the negative. What your investigator thought was my death certificate was for that baby. I wasn't trying to get away with anything, okay?
He stood.
If you don't believe me, ask my mother. What's with all your suspicion, anyway?
Well, besides the death certificate, there's the way you pretended not to know me at the barbecue restaurant. The fact that you're associating with a guy I arrested for assaulting a woman. The black and blue place on Darlene's arm.
Chi looked around the studio again, at the gun, the beer and liquor, what could have been drugs. I think it comes down to trusting that a person is who he says he is. What's going on in this studio?
We'll get there, but I have a question for you first. Why are you so tough on Herbert?
Chi shifted his weight from heel to toe. We've talked about that already, and my answer is the same. I have no respect for men who beat up on women. Is he the one who flattened my tire?
No. I did that, so you'd come over here to talk to me. And yeah, you're right. Herbert did some time for domestic violence, but he is less angry now. He learned how to get out of tough situations at home without using violence.
C.S. motioned to the gun, the baggie with the white powder, the beer, the empty liquor bottles.
You're probably wondering about this stuff, right?
Right.
Like I said, these are all props for the video.
Here. He handed the gun to Chi. Chi took it and looked at it. It was unloaded.
C.S. picked up the little Ziploc bag. This? It looks like meth, right? But it's salt a friend gave me from Zuni Salt Lake. It's a blessing to have it here.
He handed it to Chi.
Taste it if you don't believe me.
Chi opened the bag. The contents did look like salt, but he wasn't about to taste it. He closed it and offered it to C.S.
We're done with it. Take it.
Chi put the bag of salt in his pocket. Tell me about the bruise on Darlene's arm, and then we'll talk about my tire.
C.S. glanced at the big digital clock over the door. Better than that. Dee will be here soon. She can tell you herself.
No, I left her in London at the dorm. They said they had to study.
I told Dee there were too many secrets around here and that I was going to tell you about my name. She said she was ready to tell you about what happened to her arm.
How did she know I'd be here?
I told her.
You knew because of the flat tire.
He nodded. I figured giving you a flat meant you'd come here and blame it on me or Herbert.
You're right about that.
And then we'd talk and you'd understand and give us some help.
Help? With what?
With whom, actually? With Juanita.
14.
Joe Leaphorn left the Window Rock offices of the Navajo Tribal Police Department in a mood that matched the heavy overcast sky. He argued with the weather.
Come on, snow, if you are going to. Enough of this pointless cold gray.
He stopped at Basha's for some cough medicine for Luisa and a copy of the Navajo Times, and on impulse picked up a box of Navajo tea bags, the kind some entrepreneur made that saved grandmothers the trouble of gathering the plants and enabled Navajo families living in Pittsburgh and Boston to have a reminder of home. He could certainly have asked one of the secretaries at the station for some of the herbs and had enough to make a gallon for free. But he didn't like to receive favors unless he knew he could repay the kindness, and the office staff seemed different every time he visited. That's why he enjoyed helping Chi and Bernie. When he was busy as a private investigator, they had gathered information for him that as a civilian he didn't have rapid access to. He happily returned the good deed when he could. Chi had come across an ex-con who might have it in for him, another questionable character, and a man alive despite a death certificate. Thinking of Chi, Leaphorn remembered how a cat had saved the man's life by alerting him to an intruder. That triggered another memory, the crucial thing he'd come to the store for, cat food. Leaphorn held firm to the opinion that cats should support themselves by ridding the house and surrounding landscape of mice, but neither Luisa nor the cat agreed. Looking at the bags and cans of cat food with their pictures of big-eyed felines, well-nourished and stress-free, lifted his spirits. He smiled at himself, an old man cheered up by illustrations on cat food containers. He selected a bag with a cat that looked like his, or was it Luisa's, and headed home. Luisa had warmed some soup for them. She always added crackers, and sometimes cheese or peanut butter to their weekday lunch. But she hadn't done it this time, so Leaphorn filled in.
He set the table with spoons and a rectangle of sturdy paper towel he preferred to her little napkins. She sat in her regular place, looking out the window, not reading, not asking him yet about the meeting and his new assignments. A sign, along with the neglected lunch additions, that she must feel terrible. He gave her the medicine. He thought the tea deserved an explanation.
My grandmother offered a tea like that to us kids every winter, so I hope you will try some. She told us it strengthened us for the cold weather. She sweetened it with a little honey when we had some.
Louisa looked at the box.
This has the Lesperma in it. That's good.
She put the box down and examined the package of cough syrup.
This stuff is guaranteed to put me to sleep.
Try them both. A little sleep might do you good.
Leaphorn spoke as he served the soup, using a measuring cup to transfer it into the bowl since he could not find the ladle Louisa hid somewhere.
Sleep would be good for you, too. I bet my coughing kept you awake all night.
No, no.
He was glad she had said all night because he had slept periodically between her coughing jacks.
How was your police meeting?
Fine, I guess. They want me to check on a couple of cold cases. Both of them have some interest to me. The suspected murder of a boy who died mysteriously at boarding school, and a woman who walked away from her family and disappeared.
They sound like they will keep you busy.
She coughed. After the soup, Leaphorn fixed Louisa the Navajo tea and put it on the table. She had a swallow.
Good, even without the honey.
He realized he had forgotten the honey and taken her spoon with her half-eaten soup. He placed a spoon on the table for her, on top of the paper towel next to the honey plate. He watched as she added and stirred.
You worry too much, Joe. I'll be fine. It's only a cold or maybe a touch of flu.
He leaned toward her.
Sit in my big chair in the living room. You'll be more comfortable. Leave your cup and I'll bring it for you.
She rose without argument and settled into the recliner. She pulled his throw with the Navajo Department of Public Safety logo over her legs. The cat curled onto her lap.
I got the Times at Basha's. Do you want to read the paper?
No, you look at it first.
Leaphorn handed her the cup and she took another little drink.
Thank you. Don't fret over me. I know you have things to do. I might take a little nap right here in this chair. Go, do your work.
The cat usually followed him to the oversized stuffed chair in the office, but today it stayed with Louisa. Before he started on his new assignments from the meeting, Leaphorn decided to finish distilling Chi's information. Clyde Herbert's background had been easy to find, but the man hadn't left much of a trail since prison. That meant he'd either stayed out of trouble or become more competent at covering his tracks. He looked at his notes and realized he could do more digging, but maybe he'd take a nap first.
A gray December day, the image of Louisa snoozing peacefully with a warm cat on her legs, the soup and crackers, all inspired a move toward the comfortable chair in his office, the one that gave him pleasant dreams. He'd stretch out for a few minutes, and then
an electronic sound woke him.
His cell phone.
He didn't use it very often this time of year because he stayed home more, and the landline was more reliable. He saw that it was Bernie.
Ya'at'e.
Ya'at'e, Lieutenant.
Speaking in Navajo, Bernie made polite conversation for a few moments, and then got down to business.
I could use your advice on how to deal with Counselor Walker. I know you said she's a Dasane, but so far I'm only seeing this porcupine's quills, not her soft side. She suspects that I'm involved in some sort of corruption cover-up, and Largo told me to change her mind. She's taking over my work life.
You know what animals eat the Dasane?
Well, sir, out here it's bobcats and mountain lions.
Do you know how they get around the quills?
Not exactly, but they must figure out how to reach the porcupine's stomach. That's the only area not protected.
Correct.
Bernie could figure out the rest, he thought.
Sir, I need another favor. It's a big one this time, and Largo says the department will pay you.
He listened as Bernie mentioned the three-ring binder of information on Wings and Roots from Cooper, and the slim folder of papers from Counselor Walker.
I can look at Walker's information if you can get it to me soon. The folks at headquarters gave me some assignments today. The binder will have to wait until next week.
I appreciate it, sir. I can scan the folder's pages and email them.
It would be better if you could make a copy and drop it by.
I can't take the time today to drive to Window Rock. Could you meet me somewhere in Gallup?
How about T&R?
T&R was an all-purpose rural shopping mecca, a truck stop, feed store, grocery, pawn shop, and snack bar a few miles west of the junction of the road into Arizona and the road to Shiprock.
That works, sir. I'm leaving the office now. Will Louisa be with you?
No, she isn't feeling well.
After the lieutenant's injury, Louisa had done all the driving. Now he had recovered enough to drive, and that freedom seemed to have further stirred his brain into more recovery.
Let me know if you have any tips on getting Counselor Walker to stop shaking her quills at me, and how to find her soft spot.
Any leads on the lost man you were involved with?
There's a little article about him today in the Navajo Times. There may have been a sighting of him hitchhiking on the interstate.
He'd brought the newspaper into his office, and Leaphorn quickly scanned the two paragraphs about Cruz, thankful that his ability to read English outpaced his ability to speak it. Then he noticed an announcement that the Navajo Tribal Council's Law and Order Committee was meeting that afternoon, chaired by Counselor Elsbeth Walker. He'd stop by to talk to her before he met with Bernie. He didn't mean to wake Louisa, but she glanced up when he entered the room to get his truck keys and his jacket.
How are you doing on all that research?
I'm almost done with Chi's request. I realized that, in his case, no news was good news.
He told Louisa about the odd death certificate and the ex-con.
Bernie wanted some information about how to deal with the counselor I know who was giving her a little trouble. The woman thinks Bernie is involved in something underhanded.
Louisa chuckled.
Bernie, that's crazy.
I'm going to the council chamber for the Law and Order Committee meeting, and then to the T&R to pick up some work from Bernie. I shouldn't be long.
Louisa coughed and sipped what was left of her tea.
I'm glad you and Bernie get along. I never know what to say to her on the phone. I think I always talk too much.
You have interesting things to say. Are you feeling better?
A bit. The rest helps.
Outside, what might have been a snowflake drifting past the window, and a few minutes later, a couple more of them. Good, Leaphorn thought. They could use the moisture, and the gloomy day would have meant something. He turned to Louisa to see if she had noticed the snow, but her eyes were closed. He gently pulled the throw a bit higher. The committee usually met at the Law and Order building, officially the Navajo Department of Public Safety Police Headquarters. But the heat was out over there, as he had learned from his appointment that morning. The chief had mentioned that the committee would use the larger Navajo Nation Council chamber.
"It's warm there already," he had said. "The heat is on because some movie people are making a documentary on WPA art. They want to include the Gerald Naylor Sr. stuff over there. A bunch of big wigs were roaming around all morning, taking pictures of the murals and shooting video."
Leaphorn parked his truck close to the exit, as was his habit, and walked to the large east-facing entrance door in the red sandstone wall. He hardly used his cane anymore, despite Louisa's urging. He had been inside the Hogan-shaped meeting room a few times, always to share a personal story about why the Public Safety Department needed more of everything. He looked around for Counselor Walker, seeing half a dozen Navajo men talking in clusters, and two women standing alone together. One of them he recognized as Elsbeth Walker, a few pounds heavier, perhaps, and still a handsome woman. The counselor looked over at him and smiled.
"Lieutenant Joe Leaphorn. It has been a long, long time. Ya'at eh.
Walker introduced the woman with her, a counselor from Kayenta who left them alone to talk.
What brings you here, Lieutenant?
Walker hadn't changed, he thought. She was never one for excessive pleasantries.
Counselor, I have a colleague. A woman you know, too. Officer Bernadette Manuelito from Shiprock.
Walker frowned.
I remember that she said she was going to talk to you about some problems with an agency in Shiprock. I can't discuss it.
Leiporn waited until he was sure that she meant what she said.
I respect you as a counselor. You take the job seriously, and you spend more time on tribal business than other counselors I've met. I remember when you thought there was something wrong with the police administration here, how you stuck with it until you uncovered the truth.
Leiporn didn't add that the truth exonerated the department.
Once you found it, you helped us get more funding.
She smiled faintly. It wasn't appropriate to be too proud of oneself, but she obviously recalled her success. He switched the topic back to Bernie.
Officer Manuelito reminds me of you in that way. She doesn't give up on something until she has figured it out. When someone shot me, she was the one who discovered who had done it and why. She will be the same with the fraud case and the missing man.
Walker drummed her fingers on the desktop, but Leiporn had seen the porcupine's restlessness before.
You know, people like us, you as a public official and me when I worked full-time, we hear a lot of things. Sometimes the person telling the story only has half the information, or leaves out something important. Sometimes they lie. That happened to me quite a few times, and it made the investigation more difficult.
She stopped drumming.
Lieutenant, get on with it. Say what you want to say.
Officer Manuelito has a fine career of service ahead of her. She's young, but she's smart and resourceful. And honest, just like you.
Walker laughed.
Like me, except for the young part. Joe Leiporn. Let's have a cup of coffee next time I'm here for counsel. I want to know what it's like to almost die.
No one has asked about that. I'll have to think on it.
Think on it. I'll call you. Now I have to get to work.
15. Verifying a burial cave was not Bernie's job of choice, but the assignment gave her a work-related reason to do what she'd been craving. Go back to the Malpais and check on the progress of the search. But before that, she had an appointment to keep. She pulled her unit alongside the convenience store and passed the gas pumps. No one was buying fuel, but there were three other vehicles there. Leiporn's white pickup, a brown minivan with Arizona plates, and a sedan with thick plastic taped to the hole where the front passenger window would have been. Inside, the smell of cleaning solution and food under heat lamps greeted her. She saw the lieutenant seated near the window, the expected cup of coffee on the tabletop. Bernie stood at the empty place across from him. Leiporn acknowledged her with a nod.
You made good time, officer. Have a seat.
I will, but first I'm going to get a Coke out of the machine and a hot dog. Do you want something?
No, thanks.
When she looked at the francs spinning under the heat lamp, she decided on a bag of peanuts instead. She waited for a little girl filling her cup with a splash of each soda the machine offered. It seemed like only yesterday her sister had been that young, and now she was thinking of going to a school hours away. When she returned to the table, Leiporn was holding a large tan envelope.
I think this missing man, Domingo Cruz, is an interesting person. Complicated. I didn't find anything criminal, although he has some activist tendencies. He was involved with AIM and spent 2 weeks at the Dakota Pipeline protest, but no arrests. I guess that goes without saying for a guy who is a top dog at an agency that works with kids, but these days you never know.
Leiporn opened the envelope and extracted some printed sheets of white paper. He put the first one on the table facing Bernie.
What do you notice about it?
She looked. Most petroglyphs I've seen are on sandstone or softer rock, not pecked into lava.
Anything else?
The design itself. The spiral is larger than most I've seen. It must have taken someone a long time to carve it. She put the picture down. I saw this image in Cruz's sister's house. When I commented on it, she said her brother had taken the photograph and given it to her for her birthday.
Interesting. Now look at this.
He moved the first picture aside and showed her another. Bernie picked it up. Cruz's photograph, or one very similar, formed a backdrop for a website that sold Indian artifacts. She couldn't tell from the tiny images on the sheet if the pots, arrowheads, and spear points were old or reproductions, but the large text said, "Genuine ancient native artifacts from private land. Priceless." The rest of the type was too small to read. She set the sheet of paper back down.
"Did you click on any of these items to see if there was more description or a price?"
He took a taste of his coffee.
"They are all expensive and not well described. The website address is there, so you can look yourself. In the meantime, this might help."
He handed her an old-fashioned magnifying glass. She held it over the tiny type. The text credited the objects to archaeological sites near a historic trail running through the lava that connected the Zuni and Acoma pueblos.
"This thing makes me feel like Sherlock Holmes."
She started to hand the magnifier back to him.
"What do you think?"
"Keep it. You'll need it for this."
Leaphorn passed her another printout.
"I took it from that same website. Take another look."
"There's a credit line."
She read it out loud. "Background photo by Domingo Cruz from the collection of Merrily Cruz. Original photography for sale." Bernie enjoyed her Coke.
"I talked to Cruz's twin sister, Merrily, and she told me she sold art on the internet, but not Indian artifacts. When I admired the petroglyph photo, she told me she had an extra print."
He put the pages back in the folder and handed it to her.
"Technology is not my strong point, but the appearance of Domingo Cruz's photo on that site makes me wonder what Cruz might have been doing out in that lava besides working with Wings and Roots."
"He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who would steal from the dead."
Bernie stirred her Coke with the straw.
"He told the girls to stay away from the caves."
"Earlier you said you had seen this photograph in the home of Cruz's sister. Are you sure it was the same picture?"
"Yes."
Leaphorn reached into the breast pocket of his shirt and took out the small spiral notebook he always carried. He thumbed through it.
"I discovered that they were adopted by a family in Utah. I didn't do any specific checking on her, only on Domingo."
"Merrily told me she and Cruz went different directions after high school."
"That's right, as far as I can tell."
He took another sip of coffee.
"You better get on the road, Manuelito. I will do a little more checking into the Cruz family. I'll let you know if I find anything else interesting."
He slid the envelope toward her.
"And I think you have something for me."
She put her backpack on a chair, pulled out the folder from Walker, and extracted some papers held together with a staple.
"Here's a copy of what the counselor gave us."
Leaphorn glanced at what he had been handed.
"Drive carefully,"
he said.
"I hear a big storm is on the way."
At the search headquarters, the mood was subdued, a contrast to the adrenaline-filled scene she'd encountered on her first visit. Katz, the incident commander, looked older than when they had met a few days ago.
"I'm glad you're the one representing Navajo out here. It's always easier to work with a person who already knows the lay of the land. Are you ready for a hike?"
"Sure. Give me a minute to put on my hiking boots."
Bernie regretted leaving the boots in the trunk of her unit, where they had soaked in the cold. She pulled her warmest hat over her ears, grabbed her gloves, and added an extra energy bar to her backpack. She moved the three-ring binder to the trunk. Katz introduced a young man with a mustache.
"This is Ted. He found the cave, and he can take you to it."
"Thank you. How far?"
"Oh, about 3 miles if we don't get lost." He grinned. "Don't worry. I know exactly where it is. The last thing we need is another lost or injured person.
The hike took Bernie to an area of the Malpais she hadn't seen before, beautiful and treacherous. Ted set a fast pace, and she pushed herself to keep up. After about 20 minutes, she felt more assured on the uneven terrain. The exertion of climbing boulders, hiking up stone ridges, and balancing along a ropey snake of solid stone warmed her, and she shoved her hat into her coat pocket. There was no trail, only common sense and the memory